Hey Gurudev, welcome to the full moon celebration for this month. This month we have the very great honor to have with us Susan Watterson, whom Maharshi called the first poet of the Age of Enlightenment. And Susan, as you will see, expresses with great clarity and with great depth Maharshi's knowledge in the form of poetry, and this comes not from some intellectual understanding of Maharshi's knowledge only, but it comes from her direct experience, which has come up through very advanced champion-level yogic flying in the international competition, yogic flying competition of 1986. Susan won 4 gold medals, and since then she has... And since then, she maintains all the records for yogic flying for the ladies in all 4 events. 25-meter hurdles, long jump, high jump, and 25-meter dash. So, from the end, Maharshi says, this is very important. Maharshi says... Maharshi says... His world famous quote on yoga flying is, the higher they go, the happier they become. And this clarity of experience that has come up in Susan through her great advanced yoga flying has led to these beautiful poems that she has brought to us tonight. And in 1971, she became a teacher of transcendental meditation. And then she joined the Ladies World Government of the Age of Enlightenment and became director of the National Capital of the Age of Enlightenment in Los Angeles. And from 1975 to 78, she was director of 6-month courses for our world movement. And in 1980, she became a founding member of the Mother Divine Program. So that's an extremely significant accomplishment. And... She has been on that program until 2002, and then she worked with the great Raja for Food Purity of the world, Raja John Fagan. And through utilizing the great abilities, the great siddhis that come with the development of consciousness, and are, as Maharshi says, a measure of the development of consciousness, through these abilities, she helped start the monumental project in the world, the non-GMO project with Raja John Fagan, which has transformed and is continuing to transform the entire food industry in the world so that food can contribute to the development of siddhis and to the development of enlightenment, because life is meant to be lived in bliss. And now Susan will express that bliss of life, and we will look inside and we will see how it will, the experiences that she will be presented in her poetry will be enlivened inside of us to a good extent as she is reading her poems. So Jai Gurudev, great joy to have you, Susan.
Knowledge opens our hearts. Knowledge gives us each other. Knowledge is born of the absolute search for another. Seeking, it creates and finds itself, creation and creator. Finding, it knows itself, the only love, the only lover. Welcome and thank you for joining me tonight in this celebration of the unfoldment of Maharshi's total knowledge through the years. It's appropriate that we'd be celebrating this Hanuman Jayanti this way, because Hanuman was well known for being the most perfected siddha in time. And Maharshi clarifies on many of these days of Hanuman Jayanti, he clarifies that the way Hanuman did it was by using total knowledge. The quote actually is, Bar Bar Raghubir Samhari, which means, again and again, I take recourse to Ram in my heart. So, Ram, of course, Maharshi's pointed out, is consciousness. But in the heart is another element. Are we all right here? The simultaneous enlivenment of knowledge and love to their fullest realities as consciousness, which is our own self, is unique to Maharshi and makes him the most outstanding teacher in the landscape of education. The fact that we now have the means not only to know, but to experience ourself as the infinite source of total knowledge, which is unbounded love, is an incomparable gift. So all my poems, with their attempts to capture Maharshi's knowledge, are about knowledge and love. Since 1957, when Maharshi inaugurated the spiritual regeneration movement in India, every one of the 59 years since then has been epic for the transformation of life on earth from misery to greater peace and happiness. And many of us in Fairfield are privileged to have witnessed that transformation. I hope all of you leave this evening with with revitalized appreciation for the incomparable feats that Maharshi accomplished as the most effective teacher one could ever find. But you may also share with me tonight some of the joys and challenges I faced as first poet of the Age of Enlightenment. As you can imagine, capturing Maharshi's total knowledge in poetry form had its challenges for many reasons. One is, Maharshi didn't want to be praised, and he deferred all praise to his teacher. And also, he didn't want the scientific validity of his teachings to be mixed up by misunderstandings that prevailed about love, God, devotion. And also, his teaching is that ultimately, only total knowledge can worthily praise total knowledge. Only Ved can comment on Ved. Only the knower of Brahm can describe Brahm, which, of course, Maharshi did perfectly, and anything else is an attempt. As it turns out, those challenges were blessings for me. Because, first of all, I was the daughter of a Southern Baptist minister, very close to my father and mother, both of whom were saints. And I wanted more complete truth than Christianity could offer, but I needed to find a pathway forward that didn't offend Christianity and didn't upset my parents. So it was perfect that Maharshi didn't encourage or accept worship, and he wasn't establishing a religion. Also, I was quite steeped in experiences of God and devotion from a very real level, but now after the first experience of transcendental meditation where I experienced myself as unboundedness and the light of God lit up the whole self, I could write poetry and describe the experience of God and love and devotion from a new level of authenticity. And my father had the same experience. He was the first person I taught to him. So most of my poetry is addressed to God, either the impersonal God in the form of supreme totality, or to some personal form of God. I became most familiar with Mother Divine, having been on the Mother Divine program for so long. But also, in my experiences, the devatas were very predominant, and they came forward in different ways. And so different ones of my poems praised them. As you can imagine, in a short hour, we're not going to be able to get through many of the years of Maharshi's unfoldment of knowledge, nor are we going to be able to touch even a small number of the thousands of poems I've written. But nevertheless, it's such a joy to have this evening with you. The challenge that only Brahm can worthily praise Brahm was a challenge that could only be overcome by compassion. And my first direct experience of that compassion set me on the path to becoming the first poet of the Age of Enlightenment, a title for which I am eternally honored and grateful. It was on my teacher training course in Mallorca in 1971, which is Maharshi's year of, anyone know? the science of creative intelligence, where along with 2,000 other students, and I bet some of you were there, right? Raise your hands. Yes, great. We heard the most stunning outpourings of knowledge we could have ever imagined. During one of the first evenings, Marcia gave an incredible lecture, and the only quote I remember from it now is that the relative is the hope of the absolute. And then he went on to describe that the relative is the praise of the absolute, the relative is the expression of the absolute, the liveliness of the absolute. Without the absolute would be flat. So I loved that because I didn't like denying the relative. And I wrote a poem about it. And the next evening was one of the first celebrations that we had. And the only reason we knew it was a celebration was because Rick and Paul Farso sang. And I was sitting to the left of Maharshi, right on the side and the back, in the wing. And so it took a lot of bravery for me to stand up and say, Maharshi, I have a poem I'd like to read about, I forget how I worded it, in praise of the absolute or something. And Maharshi didn't turn to look at me at all. He looked straight ahead and he said, no, he just completely blocked me, basically. He said, no, absolute doesn't require any praise. Something like that. So, but I was stunned. I thought, have I misunderstood something? So I said, but Maharshi, what about that beautiful lecture you just gave about how the relative is the hope of the absolute and the relative is praise of the absolute? And he turned and looked at me and he said, read it, read it. So I read that poem. I don't have it anymore. But Maharshi stopped me about every stanza and commented on what I had said and praised it. And so, boy, I could hardly sit down. I was floating by the end of the night. But that was the beginning of my determination to capture Maharshi's knowledge in poetry form as much as possible. So let's start with 1971, that year, Maharshi's Year of the Science of Creative Intelligence. And At that teacher training, he did go into Brahman a little bit, and hunger as Brahman is the eater. Let's see, I have that quote. Atha charachara grahanat, which is Brahman is the devourer of the movable and the immovable. That's from the Brahma Sutras. And I loved that too. So I wrote a poem on that, and I'll read that one tonight. It's called Hunger. I have seen how my various qualities defined me. Thus I saw the world till appetite refined me. Hungering for thee who fills all emptiness, I tasted wholeness. However rare, it satisfied my difference, for it devoured me in its pure existence, and all variety in such a oneness that relished variance. Knowledge only realized me as eater, superior to every food, creator of every good, and good to all things. I create to deserve my supreme taste, and nothing changes except my health perfected lets me eat such that nothing is rejected. I, consciousness, conscious of my vast extent, everywhere give compliment, and difference round me then is nourishment to the living of pure knowledge that is made sentient with variety. I in myself remain, and well-fed, all sustain. Let's fast forward to 1975, which is the year of, anyone know? The dawn of the age of enlightenment. Thank you, Denise. That's very good. And in that year, I had just finished my master's degree, and Maharshi came to L.A. to inaugurate the dawn of the age of enlightenment. He was making a world tour to inaugurate the dawn of the age of enlightenment. And one of the great events that were happening was in the L.A. airport, there's a huge, huge conference room. And about, I guess, 5,000, 6,000 people came for it. And I came up from Santa Barbara where I was getting my degree. I happened to be at the curbside when Jerry Jarvis drove up with Maharshi. And so I was thrilled and said hello and all of that. And then Maharshi looked at me and said, "So read something tonight?" That was, and I was completely shocked. I mean, "This, you mean tonight?" And he said, "Yes." So I got there late that night and sat way in the back. And there were literally thousands of people. If anyone knows exactly how many, please don't ruin my story by telling it. It's less than 5,000. So, but I was way in the back. And I thought, okay, forget that. It's not going to happen. And Maharshi gave a beautiful lecture, an hour and a half long. And then it was obviously winding down. And Maharshi quietly looked up, found me eye to eye and way in the back, and nodded, a very subtle nod, but I knew he was saying I should read. I thought, oh my God, how am I going to get up to the podium? Because there were just so many throngs of people and no path. So I started winding my way through everybody, and Maharshi continued talking. And when I got up to the podium finally, Maharshi drew the talk to a close and nodded to Jerry, letting Jerry know he should introduce me. And so Jerry introduced me, and then I, as I walked by Jerry to the podium, Jerry said, "Suck it to him." Never forget that, because it gave me a sense of humor in the midst of the challenge. I don't have the poem that I read that night either, but I have a poem that was something, don't mind if I drop things. But it was something like the following poem. Come to that light, which is your own light, light within, light of eternal silence. For life and love, stars and sun, all that seems bright shines but by that light. Come to consciousness, which is your own light. Let silence look on silence. That self-referral glimpse is Vedic silence, total knowledge, through silent insight, eternally transfinite. So come to that silence which all laws of nature incite, deriving their breath to sustain every grain of life and sustain totality, diversified to reunite. That wholeness is your own light. Constituting the universe, nourishing in might, extending its literature to the infinite range, those qualities of our intelligence, remembering sequence, right, all creation in that light. Now all peoples shall emerge from a long night and come by one guiding light to their silence within, to heaven within, made heaven on earth, as we come to that light, which is our own light. Clap after every poem. Okay, so in 1975 also, I had just finished my degree and came to Europe for an ATR, an advanced course for teachers of TM. And at the end of that course, I don't remember how long it was, but there were about 500 people on it. Maharshi decided he was going to do an extension. Turns out the extension was where he wanted to start a new program, and it was the beginnings of the TM City program. So we had our celebration night where he was there, and I read a poem in celebration of the Age of Enlightenment, which I'll read now, just read a part of it. tonight I'm going to be just basically reading parts of my poetry, excerpts from poems and sort of the other thing. But this is the poem I read that night, called Age of Enlightenment, addressed to the Supreme Totality. In thine abundance, we all wonders write. Our subtle breath is like the fluid pen that ripped well moved the order of all worlds, and by its movement lets no verses end. Thy silence flows and artful words arise, falling to perfect form in lawful line. What rules thy meter makes our mind adopts, nor by its boundlessness forfeiting rhyme. 'Tis but thy being makes all borns be filled. Thy fullness lets our acts with life pulsate. So like the starry stanzas, we succeed in our design, this heaven to create. Then comes this age, and all expressions bow, for poems are not with glory so endowed. I actually really liked that poem, and I was very happy. So I went from that course where he made me the director of and then after that I became the director of six-month courses for single ladies and couples with children. And the only reason I'm telling you that is because it afforded me the great privilege of often traveling with Maharshi in the car or in the helicopter, all the time with many others, and top scientists and top government officials and that kind of thing, but I got to be there. One time we were driving through the mountains from one spot to another, and on the side was a very steep cliff, at least two-story buildings high, and climbing that cliff was a huge tractor, and the cliff was 90-degree angle. I mean, it was remarkable to see. And as we passed by it, Marcia was quiet and watched the whole thing as we passed. And then when we got past, he was smilingly musing, and he said, "You know what causes I don't remember the exact quote, but you know what allows the tons of steel to climb that steep cliff of loose soil?" And we were all quietly wondering what he was going to say. And he said, "The gap." And we all went, "The gap, the gap, gap." And he held up his finger and said, "The gap in the wheel." I loved that. So I wrote a poem about it. Not one of my best, but I wanted to read it anyway because it allowed me to tell you that story. It's called Savor the second as in 60 seconds per minute. Savor the second, all laws relish. Momentous the moment, constructing eternity. Splendid the speck, the vacuum embellished. Precious the point, punctuating infinity. Sovereign the gap, joining intermittence. Poignant the peace laid between parts. Studded with jewels are sounds linked by silence. Rich beyond sound is space beneath arc. Holding all power is the dark between stars, connecting light years gone before and gone after. Invincible the space by which steel climbs steep cliffs through silent gaps in the wheel of a tractor. Savor the link, timeless without a second. There between points, wholeness is continuum. Fall from the moment where judgment is reckoned into eternity by consciousness bidden to be known as continuum, our self no more hidden. Thank you. 1976 was Marcy's year of government. And the special thing about that year was especially that he formally introduced the Transcendental Meditation TM City program, including yogic flying. And I was enjoying all that time with him and had wonderful experiences in the TM City program. When I first got the yogic flying, I experienced hovering. I was very light, and I experienced that my consciousness was just reverberating impulses of divine beings who had a form that was sort of geometric, kind of looked like Sanskrit, but they were adoring me and I them, and the exchange created tremendous lightness. I saw their mechanics, how when infinity collapsed to the point at every point, it spewed out these reverberations that constructively or destructively interfered to create forms in creation. But it created my physiology as this very light, sieve-like fabric. So I wrote this poem celebrating that experience called Hovering. In my wholeness, feeling to soar, suddenly my resonant silence is lit from within, with reverberant waves of myself, each a glorious and almighty hymn. Hosts of my gladdened self like fibers pulsate, in countless wave functions, each my cherished measure, each a law, upholding with a pointed frequency my invincibly limitless stature. Before my eye, their exhilaration propels their layers into close-knit numbers, a fabric that moves to uplift my gravity, fulfilling my feeling to hover. And no symphony can approach their rejoicing. To all wavelengths they go to free me completely, all their divine sounds unified in my wholeness to praise me in one blissful synchrony. In my ecstasy, knowing what lightheartedness elevates all life in this acceleration, I bow to thee, holiness of my wholeness, self of my self-adoration. Now we will go to 1980. Which is the year, Marci's year of pure knowledge, the Ved. And in that year, Marci brought to light his commentary of Rig Ved, the Aparishaya Bhashya, and also introduced the principles of Ayurveda. That was the year, many of you will remember, where Maharshi conducts the first international Vedic science course in New Delhi, India. How many were there? Yeah, there were over 3,000 people there. So I had just come from an assignment in L.A. where I was made the director of the World Plan Executive Council was there, and Marci wanted transformed into a capital. So I was given that job along with a few other ladies from Ladies World Government. So I had not been around and hadn't read in a long time. And so there I was on the course, and I really wanted to connect with Marci on that level. So I had written a poem, because there was a celebration of a birthday, a very important birthday that night. And so I got up with knees shaking. Byron Rigby was sitting where close to where I was standing. He said he was afraid he was going to have to catch me. So I got the nerve to say, Marci, I have a poem about birthdays. And Marci again blocked me. He said, where is anything born? Nothing is ever born. And that's the knowledge that he had given out at the course, you know, Aparishaya Bhashya, uncreated commentary. Nothing is ever created. So he said, where is anything created? Nothing is ever born. And that was the first line of my poem. So I knew that he was inviting me to read. So I just launched right in and read this poem. It's called Vedic Science and Birthdays, addressed to the Supreme Totality. Nothing is ever born. There is but the awakening of thy glory. For thy wholeness is always adorned with all possible creations. Our sequential appearance is thy self-description, thine unmanifest life, eternally drawn to comment on its endless duration, delighting in self-recreation. Nothing is ever born, for diversity is thine own inner nature. 'Tis thyself that assumes different forms, remaining within thine infinity. There the ageless script of silence sits written, pronouncing thy oneness, self-assertive, ever worshipful of thy divinity. Then nothing truly is born. Pure knowledge continually comes to awakening in organizational power, uncreated and all-embracing. And supremely awakened self in itself sings in all expressions its own endless glory. So thy self-born love, kindly ageless, makes us immortal sages. So now we'll go to 1983, which is Marci's Year of the Unified Field. And in that year, Marci brought to light the unified field theories of modern physics with reference to the self-referral field of transcendental consciousness. Most of you will remember with me that 1983 was momentous because that was the year of the first Taste of Utopia course through the first assembly of 7,000 yogic minds, fires right here. And so that was a really wonderful experience. I was on the Mother Divine program at the time that I had gotten the message to read a poem. And I had been listening to John Hagelin's interchanges with Marci, which were very powerful and beautiful. So I used John Hagelin's description of that level of quantum field theory in this poem. Unified field-based civilization in honor of the first assembly of 7,000 siddhas of the Age of Enlightenment to give the world a taste of utopia, again addressed to the Supreme Totality. Unified in the graviton field of your love, blessed with bliss on the measureless scale of your grace, we awake to your super multiplet nature, generating us all, though opposing components, to uphold your super symmetry, where quantum fields leave not a trace. Unified in the dynamic field of your love, given all powers whose records are never erased, we adore your irreducible silence, correlating us all as point value components, to uphold your gentle invariance in the curvatures of time and space. Unified in the engaging field of your love, transformed to the supreme symmetry group by your praise, we observe the various modes of our self-referral performance, once separate components, and watch the time translational civilization be raised. Go to 1990, the year of alliance with nature's government. We're going to that year because something very special happened during that year. Marci was designing Vedaland fountains. Some of you may remember this. And so at Flow Drop, where he was at the time, he had professionals come and create fountains, magnificent fountains in the yard outside, so he could come and sit and view it. And the fountains were going very high, and like as high as a one-story building, and they were designed in mandala shapes so that they all fell into symmetry and synchrony in circular motions, and they were lit by different colors so they looked like rainbows, and it was really a spectacular vision. And after viewing them, Marci gave a beautiful lecture about Vedaland fountains, but mainly he gave a lecture about knowledge and Ved and why we bow down. In that lecture he said, the reason why we praise and then bow down is because we want to take on those qualities ourselves. So when we praise someone with those qualities lively, therefore, and then we bow down, then we're basically merging those qualities into the absolute within us. And they get enlivened, so we become those qualities. So I thought that was so beautiful, so I wrote a poem about it. I won't read the whole thing. But this is actually addressed to Maharshi. Seer of waves in ocean, of ocean in waves, of a parashe atwa, composing Ved, thou fountain head of all knowledge. Now technology bows to display Vedalila's glorious array within us, our self, self-acknowledged. As in thy presence men stand, then bow down, beseeching thy bliss, then in blissfulness drowned, praising that, so to become that. These founts praise thee to the highest heaven, and descend on rainbows to thy feet, to thy Brahman, whose descent heaven reenacts. Yea, all vrittis in creation repeat this rite of Namo Namaha, alighting the night, primordial yajna of consciousness. For everywhere self pours itself into self, whose primal performance is Ved, self-impelled into sequence, invoking its wakefulness. So creation is structured in surrender of self to itself. Every wave remembers in rising or diving its goal. Thus curved in obeisance, all streams are one ocean. Their self-interacting display the grand notion of wholeness that loves to extol itself in all parts as whole. Our wholeness, whom all laws extol, Ved cognized for life to be whole. I want to keep track of the time tonight because I really do want us to leave on time. So we'll go to 1995, Maharshi's year of silence. And in that year, he gave incredible talks about silence. And I wrote a poem about it later when I was also having a very clear experience of that level of Anunyabhav that's always lively with everything, but in the state where it's not formed yet. So it's intensely blissful because everything is eternal. And so I'll just read a part at this point. It's called We Wait Upon You, and it's addressed to Supreme Silence. In that silence, where everything abides, but nothing begins or ends, holding no place, where the devas reside in quiet, enraptured with bliss, leaving not a trace, ever attentive to your slightest wish, there we wait upon you. There with bated breath we look upon you, creation's administrator, all-pervading illuminator, in whom nothing is undone or forgotten, in whom all beings shimmer supernal, barely holding their own, like reflections on water. So ecstatic is that threshold, where they are neither formed nor unformed, but eternal. There is nothing near or far. Every creature, every star is attendant. All places reached at once, no space is breached, as only resplendent grace is, where the sheen of drizzling diversity ascends to tend the transcendent sea. We call upon that quiescence, for heaven on earth. And devas seem to take birth, assuming the semblance of flurry and scurry, though they too are yet unmoved. They simply wait upon you by highlighting or hiding their self-reflections, alighting illusions that instantly fabricate our interjections. Our praise thus calls to the forefront the reality of which our world was unaware. Heaven on earth was always there. Now, what time is it? Can someone tell me what time it is? Okay. So 1998 was the year of, following 1997, which was Maharshi's year of global administration through natural law. In 1997, Maharshi brought out all the different problem-free administrations based on total knowledge of natural law. So he went into healthcare and education and management and defense. He also went into Vedic economy and Stupacaveda. Vedic architecture and Vedic agriculture, by the way. The following year, 1998, was the second year of global administration through natural law, and in that year, Maharshi established the Global Development Fund. Some of you may have been there in New York City when he had the movement leaders gather all the wealthy people that we possibly could in the United States to come to New York City and celebrate this Global Development Fund. And I was asked to read a poem, so I wrote the following. I'll just read excerpts. Celebrating the Global Development Fund and its relationship to our experience of self-referral consciousness. This is an appeal for a healthy economy. Oh, maddening pursuit of wealth, now be turned to face the right direction. Reorient toward the omnidirectional self and find affluence in that graceful introspection. For self-referral performance is the silent instrument, self-sufficiently collapsing infinity to accessible decimal points that can be moved at will to create successively ascending ordinal numbers, multiplying by quantum numerical leaps into innumerable quantities. Tree, sky, sun, galaxy, our own consciousness quantified. Spirituality condensed into physiology. Infinite silence that plunges itself whirlpooling into infinite dynamism. Remaining ever immovable, unexhausted, yet exhaustive in expression. Ever full treasury, where wealth is the same as divinity. Where flowing and overflowing is bliss, cosmic eternal fund, inexhaustible fund. Through that economy, nature's economy, we are guaranteed royalty by simplicity. And all pursuit is blessed with the fruit of all knowledge, transforming youth into continuum and fate into good fortune. Now by self-referral trust, all yearning for wealth is turned in the right direction, where all people and nations shall find their rightful perfection. So, going to 2004, Maharshi's Year of Peace Palaces, Maharshi devoted most of that year to creating the 3,000 peace palaces around the world. And he put a lot of attention on it, gave beautiful lectures about it. And based on one glorious lecture he gave, I wrote the following poem, which when he heard it, he said, it should be framed and put in every peace palace. And I haven't done that yet, but I'm going to. I'll start more towards the end. Celebrating the Year of Peace Palaces. Transcendence prevails simply by entering in these capitals of the global country of world peace, where ends the world's din. And even the tired mind is made resplendent magnifying the light of God from this self-establishment. Through their walls, being shines into all environments. The partiality preached in modern colleges, the partiality preached in the modern college is there arrested in the light of total knowledge, and knowing rests in the sweet relief of pure knowingness. The history of knowing less and less as we invest more and more in warring books, while life is failing wherever we look, that long history of suffering and malice is forgotten inside the timeless peace palace, where silent abiding peace resides, tried and true. So every day is filled with bliss anew. Though we may be few, we less and less do, accomplishing more and far more than others do, by not and by merely remembering, but also attending self through and through. Know thyself becomes be thyself through technologies taught whereby our thinking is made soft, so soft as to be brought by increasing bliss to pure silence in the height of alertness, the image of God united with God through awakened rest. Then those enlightened take flight to heighten that wakefulness. Hosts of yogic flyers filled full with gratefulness rise in peace to raise the world to peaceful holiness. Okay, so in 2007, we all know why that was a very moving year for us. One of the wonderful lectures that Marcia gave in that year was one of my favorites, where on the birthday of Ram, he gave a beautiful lecture about Ram. And he described Ram as Komalangam Ram. Komalangam means tender limbs. And he explained that the tender limbs are the Ved. And I was very moved by this lecture because I often experience Ram as my own self, my own consciousness, and Ved as constituting my physiology. So I wrote this poem addressed to Lord Ram based on this lecture. And I'll again just read excerpts. Gather us to you, Lord, as it was before, though never do we leave your heart where we are remembered and adored, where devotion is supreme deity. So there all beings are to unity restored. There in every part the cosmos dwells devoutly, where tides of most tender emotion swell proudly, soft-spoken, in love's vocal adoration of its source, Ved's outpouring into notion. Enfold us in your Komalangam Ram, in Ved's most delicate embrace, whose rise and fall is light playing on light, hiding or highlighting the face of wholeness, eternally inciting creation's diversity. Oh, keep us there, where life and death, tears and laughter join hands, melted as one faithful heart, back at their primal start. There, Gyan and Shakti are conjoined, and all beings attain highest promotion. There, with you we are united, and all relationships are requited, arrighted by enlightened leadership, giving rise to Maharshi's Ram Raj, all revering, undivided. By our transcendence, afford us a token of Vedic devotion, and Satyug is stayed forever in love's omnipresent ocean. The last poem I wanted to read tonight is celebrating the Year of Invincibility, 2008, Global Ram Raj. And again, I won't read the whole poem. But this also expresses my experience, which grew from perceiving the impulses of creative intelligence as devatas that were spewed out from infinity collapsing to point at every point, to realizing that, experiencing directly, that nothing is ever created. And with that experience, I finally understood what Maharishi meant when he said, everything is everywhere. Because that's what I saw in my experience. Absolutely everything is everywhere and never created or destroyed. And what happens is simply by our intention, because wholeness is so willing to please, to fulfill, it makes itself highlight or hide different frequencies to fulfill our requests. And the devatas jump to do whatever wholeness wants. And so that's what happens, but nothing ever really happens. Nothing is ever really done. It's only a matter of that wholeness is watching itself. Wholeness is watching itself watch itself at every point. And the self-reflection creates illusory impulses, illusory images that make it appear things are created. So this poem tries to capture that. By whose love are all desires fulfilled? We ask and we receive not by convention, by the expertise of knowledge. We surrender intention to circumventing wholeness, where the dynamic of knowingness is devotion. That oceanic compassion receives the thought and sets sequential mirage in motion, all fulfilling by its skill. Creation is a labor of love, yet still a notion. Everything is eternally everywhere, and even so, wholeness so loves that it takes on untold rigmarole every request to uphold. And just so, oneness fulfills its own desire to appear as many. Conceived in that image, we impose intending, and oneness ever looking to itself takes to heart our behest. Its omnipresent eyes mirroring itself in self-reflection, now with that new direction, make infinity appear to loop down to the point of sight in self-affection. Devas ride their resounding swirls of light, whose consequent excitations collide. They pierce united with beseeching speed through the point of collision that hides their spiraling back to infinity again. Waves entreating the all-embracing ocean. All this, and nothing ever changed. Creation is vain. Zeroed in and zeroed out to entertain any given wish on the omni-range of devotion's interchange, where wholeness watches itself watching itself, and those self-reflecting window panes adoringly mirror each other, mounting love into ecstatic self-laudation that hides or highlights pre-existing reverberations. So appearing to manifest creation. Nothing is ever done. Yet still, because we ask, he comes. At Flying Club for hosting me tonight, along with the Festival of World Peace. And they kept wanting me to sing, and I I have a number of songs, but they weren't prepared. But what time is it now? Is it time? Do you want to, I'll sing one song. I will prepare you that it's very devotional. It's my experience of Gurudev. And it's a song to Gurudev. And Maharshi says, of course, that he's our guiding light. And so that's in the song.
I don't know how this is going to come out.
I'm going to be singing with myself. This is the reason why I could sing this one song, is because it's the only recording I have with accompaniment. And this was on the Mother Divine program where I wrote this song and the melody. And it was accompanied by three wonderful musicians on the Mother Divine program. So I'm going to be singing with it. And I'm a little hoarse, so if I drop out here and there, you still can hear the song. Now enjoy the pie. I can't guarantee that it's sugar-free and gluten-free, but is it?
One is gluten-free and sugar-free, and one is sugar-free.
Oh, great. Susa, with all her very busy life schedule, organized the pies for me. So please come help yourself, and there should be enough for everybody, I think.
There's plenty.
Great.